ever beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Spinning in the depths of space. So much for dramatic, so much for dramatic beginnings. I've got a frog in my throat and cans fall off my table and everything goes completely crazy. Well, so much for that. Maybe I should start again. So, spinning in the deep blue of space, rolling round a star dragged through the cosmos. Here we are on planet Earth once again. It's Sunday. It's 3 p.m. PST, 11 p.m. UK time. Welcome, brothers and sisters, and beings of indeterminate gender. We are here today in Northern Scotland. Well, I am here in Northern Scotland, but my guest is in San Diego, California, where it's all hot. Everything's hot. Laptops are hot. Temperatures are rising. Let's see. Let's see if we can chill things out a bit here. Eh? So, I'd like to welcome once again, and I'm honoured to have you on my show once again, Katie Galanti. How are you?
I'm good. I have a little bit of a fever, and so has my computer. So hopefully we will weather the heat of Southern California. Yes.
So, because
I need some of your Scotland cool.
Oh, it's cool here. Let me tell you, it's cool. It's very cool. There's very low temperatures abounding, and it's damp. And it's well, we've got the stove on. We finally put the stove on. It's time, you know, it's time to prepare for the late autumn and winter situation here.
Excellent.
So this is a very busy month here on Wolf Spirit Radio, and we've got lots of great guests, and then we've got an extra host, it appears. We'll talk about that later. But, Katie,
yes.
Good evening and greetings.
Yes, greetings to you.
I spoke with you earlier and we were talking about where do we start? Because we often, you know, just wing it and talk about stuff. But I wanted to kind of reintroduce you so that, you know, people get to know where you're at, what kind of things they can expect from you. You know, expectations are bad, but in terms of the kind of angle that you take on things, I know and appreciate that angle. It's very clear and precise kind of thing. But can we talk about how you got here? If I can ask, that's such a broad question. How you got here? You know,
I was just about to say how I got onto the planet.
Yeah. I mean, we could even, you know, if you feel comfortable in that as well. I mean, because you do have memories that extend beyond your lifetime on this planet, don't you?
I do, and in fact, I probably have more memories of that kind than most people. It just so happened that I did a lot of regression work at a certain point in my process, right? Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I gathered various memories of my past lives, and eventually it kind of started to fill in almost as a tapestry, where I literally had almost all of the memories of the past lives all tied in together from Atlantis onwards, right? And I was telling you, and I've been telling you for a while, that I'm writing a book, and that is part of what is in the book, is this journey through time that is entered through my own process, which, however, has a planetary angle in the sense that my journey is parallel to the journey of the planet, with the whole light and dark thing that has been going on this planet since Atlantean times and even before that. Mm. Right? So that's a weird angle to start. I've never started from this angle before in an interview, so maybe we can go there and do it differently for once. Like, knock it right out of the park with the weird stuff.
Yeah, let's start off weird and get weirder, you know, because, you know, I think people almost expect that. I mean, this is if there's normal stuff going on, they might tune out. Oh,
that's right.
That's so why they tune in. So let's
ever
get
beyond.
Ever beyond, indeed. Everything is. It's interesting that I'm seeing and meeting up with various other show hosts and things like that, and everybody's got this similar sorts of names, you know, like there's the word beyond occurs, and the word soul journey and soul and cosmic and essence, and, you know, all these words, everybody's got their own little niche of it.
Yeah, we need to talk about expansion, because that is really what we're all trying to do here, right? To expand consciousness and awareness beyond what we currently have, because we are living in a world in which we're given a certain version of reality.
Mm-hmm.
But that version of reality is very milquetoast-ish and it doesn't has a lot of lies in it, but also it has a lot of omissions in it. And so if you one of the things that we have that has been omitted is the true history of the Earth. We don't actually have the true history of the Earth. We have a very reductionistic vision of what the history of the Earth actually is. And most of it, especially the old stuff, is a lie, right? And so part of my journey in terms of that part, I mean, I've had several aspects to my personal story, and one of them has to do with the dark energy and how I came across with that, and we can go into that in a minute. And then there is the past life aspect of and who I am and what role I have had throughout this particular stretch of time, right? Mm-hmm. And in the Atlantean thing, I was on the planet even before Atlantis, but in Atlantis, I was actually Assyrian. I was not human. And I had blue skin, and I was kind of tall and masculine, and I'm not sure if I was a man or a woman. It seems that it was the kind of I was one of those in-between kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Androgyne.
That's right. And
a blue androgyne, nice.
Blue androgyne Syrian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my role at the time was I was the head of a mystery school, not a dark mystery school, a light mystery school. And at the time, Atlantis was very much had like a priesthood in it, and there was not a distinction between the light and dark priesthood as there is later in time. There was just one big priesthood, and my memory is that a lot of the society was part of the priesthood. It was a much more metaphysical society, and it was run through a different kind of technology that had to do with a crystalline technology and thought consciousness mixed up together. So basically the thought and the meditation process charged up the crystals, and through that they then generated energy to do various things. And there was all sorts of different skills that they had that had a lot to do with the power of the mind that we have lost. And one of the reasons which we have lost them is not just because we can't remember how to do it, but because one of the things that happened at the end of Atlantis was that the earth grids collapsed, okay? And they collapsed on they collapsed on purpose because the dark element within the priesthood actually collapsed them. And one of my jobs at the time was to look after that grid, and I did everything that I could to keep it up and to keep it going, and it didn't quite work out. And apparently, at the time, I had a whole bunch of students that, let's call them students, I don't really know how to call them, but people that worked for me to do this, and I got into a major temper tantrum.
Oh, really?
Yes. when the whole thing collapsed, I was like, right, that's it. I'm not teaching anymore. I'm not doing this anymore. You know, I had a massive temper tantrum. Then retreated to Egypt, and where I set up my own temple in the middle of the desert, where I was completely by myself, and I wanted to be by myself. I decided that I didn't want to be around people anymore, right? And I stayed in that temple for several decades, and there were people that would come to me to consult me about astrology, because I used to do astrology at the time. And so every now and then people would come to see me, but I just stayed in my temple by myself, being kind of grumpy. So it's not that I was like, I had high consciousness, right? But I took it very personally. The whole end of Atlantis, I took it very personally. And because I felt that we could, at the time, I don't feel that way anymore, but at the time I felt that we could have saved this grid, that we could have done more, right?
Can I say, and, yeah.
Yes. And one of my students at the time gave away some of the tools that I have taught them to the opposition that used them against, you know, that used them in a bad way. And so I had a lot of, I was upset, basically. Yeah. And then in this lifetime, I actually had to meet all of those students again, which happened maybe between the year 2000 and 2005. And every single one of those people I met, and I had encounters with them that had either a healing aspect to it or a rebalancing aspect. And then I also started having the memory of this lifetime, and then I had to come to terms with the fact that there was no, like the resolution of that lifetime for me was that to come to terms with the fact that actually it had very little to do with me, and that it was a mass consciousness thing. The mass consciousness was just not ready. Right. And one of the things at the time that I was, that one of the reasons for which I could not see that at the time was also because the grid was collapsing. And so the energy on the planet was extremely chaotic. And almost like now we're having the energy on the planet is rising, right? And it's chaotic, but it's rising.
Yeah.
At the time, it was chaotic and it was dropping. And so it was messing with people's heads. And so some of the non-ability to see things from a high perspective was coming because the energy was so turbulent.
Yeah.
And very difficult to navigate. And gradually, a lot of people... and it took a while, it wasn't just that lifetime, but gradually over a period of, say, about 100 years, the energy on the planet dropped quite considerably, and then nobody was able to do any of the things that they could do before. And it stayed that way. It stayed that way up until
now.
Kind of now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So can I just... head in there, so because this is a very interesting, you know, so many subjects you've touched on there. Regarding the ancient history aspect, in the next few, this is the new conversation, right? This is the new, because in the next few weeks, I'm going to have Robert Morningsky, who's going to be talking about the next an ancient shamanic tradition that comes from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He calls them the women of fire, or the ladies of fire, which is a feminine warrior energy that is a shamanic warrior, sorceress, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And then on the 11th, I'm going to have Alex Collier.
lovely.
And what you're saying just reminds me of something, and I think I'd like to insert this into this part of the conversation because I think it's relevant. And what he was talking about is the grid energy only works when the planet is in the southern magnetic hemisphere. And when we go into the north, as we have been for the last 13,000 years, we have a equipment failure. The equipment, you know, the Vimanas, all these things that they talk about, the pyramids, all of these things, they worked not because because of crystal arrangements or anything like that. They worked because we were in the southern hemisphere. And they won't work until we're back in the southern hemisphere. And this is why we're starting to see, I believe, these beams of light coming out the pyramids. They're starting to switch themselves back on again. So it's a very interesting conversation. Do go ahead, I won't interrupt you again. Well, I might.
I'm going to continue with what you're saying, that the grids, around the planet, there's a ton of grids. There's not just one grid. I see the planet clairvoyantly, and I have for the past 12 years. And this is something that I came in with. I remember I was doing a meditation in at the Violet Hill Studios in London, and I was leading this meditation, and all of a sudden I saw the planet and everything around it and so on, and it stayed that way ever since, and that was in 1999.
Well, did you say Primrose Hill?
Yes. No, Violet Hill, it's in St. John's Wood.
All right, so it's quite close to Primrose Hill.
Yeah, and it's called the Violet Hill Studios. It's a place where they do workshops and meditations. They used to have this group that was called the Tuesday Group, where anybody could come and present something. And so somebody invited me to go, so I went and I presented, and it was during a particular alignment in Taurus or whatever. Anyway, I prepared this meditation, so I went into this meditation, and all of a sudden, all the planet lit up. So it was more interesting for me than for the people there. You know, the light show.
It's a very special place, that area of London.
It's beautiful. It's lovely. It has great energy.
Very special place. I met my spiritual teacher on Primrose Hill, which is like next door, overlooking London. Wonderful place.
Yeah, it's very, very, very nice over there.
Yeah.
I had lots of experiences there. I also did my light body training there in 98. So, and that was magical. We used to meet for a whole weekend for every month for 6 months and create amazing energy. And I remember coming out of there almost drunk on the energy, walking around London, and London felt very mystical.
Well, you know, I come from London. I was born in London, and you lived a long time in London.
13 years.
Did you ever read the book by Alfred Watkins?
No.
The original book on ley lines, and the name escapes me right now. It was rewritten in 1926. But he was talking about various alignments that he saw in London.
Yes.
Then there was a book, and I'm sure you've seen this one. It's called Earth Star.
No,
it's a blue and gold coffee table size book. I think it was a softback. But in this book, it had maps of London that joined up all the churches, and guess what? They make so many regular geometric form patterns.
Yeah, I bet.
20-pointed, 12-pointed, 32-pointed, massive, massive, massive. This is like across the size of London.
I think that people are naturally drawn to build cities on places that have energy.
Yeah.
I think that some of that is natural, and then then we have the friendly opposition that then make all the patterns. You know, they build all of the stuff, and they have all their symbolism going. So but going back to the planet and the grid.
Yes, I was just going to say. Meanwhile, back in Egypt, in your own temple.
That's right. But let's go back to the grids for a second.
Okay, yeah, the grids.
Because I don't think that a lot of people do not there's a lot of people out there that say that they do grid work and that say that they do this and they do that. And I believe it's true, but I also want to just explain a little bit because what these grids actually are and what they look like and so on, right? First of all, there's an electromagnetic structure to the planet Earth. The planet Earth has a chakra system, and it also has a toroid energy system, just like we do when you see the energy. If you see clairvoyantly the energy around a person, the energy will go from the root chakra to the crown through the central channel, and then it branches out at the top and falls, and then it comes back in through the root. And it does that over and over, right?
Like a magnet.
That's right. And that is an electromagnetic flow. And we have other flows in our energy field that correspond to each one of the energy bodies, but there's one of the energy bodies that does that. The Earth has one of those also, and the North and South Pole act as the root chakra and the crown chakra point in that particular energy body of the Earth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so there's an energy flow that goes North Pole, down, South Pole, in, through the center of the Earth. And in physics, that thing, if I remember correctly, is actually called the Van Halen belt.
Not Van Halen. Van Allen.
That's right.
You're thinking of Van Halen.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's a kind of studded belt that is slung low over the hips.
Mm-hmm.
The Van Halen belt.
Whatever. So that thing, I'm going to ignore your sense of humor for a second. So I can continue because you're distracting me. So that thing is important just for itself because the electromagnetic field of the Earth is actually important for keeping our electromagnetic energy stable. If that goes away, our own electromagnetic energy starts to go a bit crazy. And in fact, I was listening to an interview by the Montauk Project people, and it was Preston Nichols that was talking, and he was talking about the Philadelphia experiment, and he was saying that when they did that experiment, that people started going crazy, and one of the reasons for which that was happening was because the device that they were using was isolating people from the Earth's electromagnetic field, that is the thing that I just described, right?
Yes.
So if you take that away, people get unhinged. They are no longer hooked into the planet. And this is actually quite important at the moment because we are at the moment going through some changes in the geomagnetic field that are being caused by the activity on the sun, and that is being caused by changes and energy changes that are going on into the core of the galaxy, right? So we're entering this very activated phase, and as we are entering this, the Earth's electromagnetic field is kind of like shifting and changing and so on, right? So that is an important piece. It's not necessarily the grid per se, but it's a very important piece of the energy makeup of the planet. And it's one that we interact with heavily. And in fact, it is the one that determines, for example, the astrological imprint at birth, right? The astrological imprint of birth is dependent on the planetary influences on the geomagnetic field. So it's important. Then other... there's other grids around the planet, and they look different. I wouldn't know how to describe, like how to tell you what they are and what they do, but they look different, and they are some that are literally planetary. They belong to Mother Earth. And then there are other ones that are belong to us, so they belong to humanity. We as humanity have a collective consciousness. And this collective consciousness, if you go and look at it psychically, it manifests as a grid structure of energy that is around the planet. And so you can go in and do all sorts of, you can go in and do healings on this thing. You can help the collective energy of humanity to shift and move through working on these things, okay? And then there are also consciousness grids that are almost like a in between, where they belong to the planet, but they impact our own consciousness. And those were the grids that actually dropped at the end of Atlantis, and that made it so that people could no longer sustain a certain kind of consciousness. And I'm not quite sure if it is a South Pole, North, you know, Southern Hemisphere, what you were saying, but I think it's definitely linked to, and it's linked to various things, but it's definitely linked to the changes that are going on in the solar system. I think that these changes that are going on in the solar system are cyclical, and every 13,000 or 26,000 years we have we go through an area of space that it's like a cosmic clock that activates, and then the galaxy starts doing something, and then so does the sun, and so on, right? So it's all very interesting, and consciousness-wise, these particular moments are almost like doorways that open, in which there is the opportunity for a shift in consciousness of whoever is around when that doorway opens, right? So we're on the planet, we're incarnated on the planet Earth right now, and when we go through these points in time in which there's an opening, then we have the opportunity to go along with the changes that are happening in the galaxy and the sun, and the planetary grids start to activate, and then our energy field starts to activate, so do our chakras, etc., etc., and then we have the opportunity to make a leap, if we want to make a leap. And how that manifests on a personal level is what we have been experiencing for the past 20 years or so, that is that a lot of us are developing kind of psychic ability, are starting to remember things that we didn't used to remember, and also the not-so-pleasant side is that as the energy accelerates, we start to shift and move through all of our blockages, and we start to experience past life blockages, childhood blockages. Usually it's the other way around, childhood blockages first, then past life blockages, and then we start to have experiences that help us to clear out all of our karma. And that then prepares us to go through this opportunity for opening. But in some ways, it's a gradual process that happens over a period of years and then accelerates, right? And right now, it seems that it's very accelerated and people are very activated almost all the time. and I'm not sure exactly how this ends because we haven't lived it yet.
But nobody's done it yet.
Exactly. Well, the last time it didn't go so good, so you know, we still have to see how it goes.
Yes. Well, I mean, according to some, that, you know, some people did make it, we're here, because we were left. Obviously, we didn't.
Yeah. Although even that may not necessarily be true, because there are a lot of people on the planet that are literally volunteers to help, right? And they may have been volunteers to help over a long timeline. Uh-huh. Not just, you know, they may basically stay here until everybody's gone on the bus. Right? So, but we definitely have experienced the timeline where things didn't quite work out, right? And there's nothing wrong with all of that in the sense that even if things do not work out, you just come back and you do it all over again. So it's not that that there's any big disaster, really. I mean, and this is one of the things that I think that we start to realize as we remember more of the past and more lifetimes, that really there's no such thing as death, there's no such thing as tragedy. Even if the planet looks as if it destroys itself, eventually it comes back, and eventually we come back, and so on. There may be some trauma to clear, there may be some blockages, you know, to work through and so on, but there's nothing really permanent. Everything is constantly changing, and even the setbacks eventually rewrite themselves. So there's a kind of optimism in that somehow.
Yeah, there's a, well, you know, some people say, yeah, it's all good, you know.
It is.
You know, if it appears bad, then it's a lesson. If it appears good, then, well, it's good karma, isn't it?
Yes, and there's always a mixture of both things going on anyway.
Absolutely. I always say that there's always a balancing factor. You might be having the most brilliant time, but there's something going on. There's going to be something that, oh, man, my foot, has, you know, I've just broken my foot. Isn't it?
Although, hopefully, with time, I'm, you know, I don't really believe in this whole we get to nirvana thing, but there definitely is something about that the more you clear and the more you become clear, it's not that life becomes more simple, because in some ways, as you become more clear, the universe throws you bigger challenges so that you can continue to grow sometimes.
Yeah.
But you often become kind of more zen in navigating those challenges, so they don't actually feel quite as insane, right? Hopefully.
Yeah, that's what you think.
Hopefully.
Ah, oh, bless. So, did you want to take like half hour breaks, or are you happy to zoom through for the next hour? Because that feels like a nice kind of, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, you can have a break now, and then we can come back.
Yeah, do you fancy a bit of Pat Metheny?
Yes, that's very nice. I love Pat Metheny.
Okay, so let's play. This is one of my favorites, The Last Train Home. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hear it for another great Canadian, Pat Metheny here with The Last Train Home. I think that's just, I mean, you can hear that brush, the drummer playing these brushes, and it's absolutely perfect, just like a train. It's not a drum machine, you know, people do this nowadays on a drum machine, but that is a real guy playing it really perfectly for like 5 minutes. Just absolutely stunning. Tonight I'm speaking with Katie Galanti. Katie, hi.
Hello. And I love Pat Metheny, by the way, and it must be a Pat Metheny weekend because you're playing Pat Metheny, I was playing it this morning, and a friend of mine was sending it to me yesterday, so there must be a Pat Metheny energy on the planet today.
Yeah, there's a gentleness about him.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's just, it's soulful, it's welcoming, it doesn't hurt you to accept his music into your heart. That's what I've always found.
No, and he's an incredibly talented guitarist.
Mm.
You know, he makes it seem very effortless, but what he's doing is actually quite complicated.
Yeah, yeah. I saw him once with Herbie Hancock, and it was mental actually. It was like two guys playing guitars against each other, and you know, it was a bit like, or Herbie Hancock was playing this kind of keyboard thing, guitar thing, and he was like, and Metheny was, and it's like, a cascade of notes against each other. It's like, oh, look, that's good, you know. Oh, but I prefer his that stuff that he was doing.
Yeah,
personally.
But isn't it interesting, they often, if you go on YouTube and you look at some of the clips of these like fusion jazz kind of artists,
mm-hmm.
they often do stuff cooperatively, so it's not, you know, there's one artist that is doing their thing, and then there's another artist that is doing their thing, but they very often get together
and do stuff
together, but I think it's really cool, because that's really, you know, at least it looks from the outside as if it's very low ego.
Mm.
And they just come together and create something unique together, and then another time they swap around and it's another group that are playing, right? So
yeah.
It's nice to see big names that are like little boys and girls playing rather than competing, right?
Yeah.
It's nice.
I saw, there's been quite a few of these videos going around recently, and there's like Chuck Berry with Keith Richard and Mark Knopfler. You know, three different generations of guitar player jamming together. But like Chuck, he was like, "Don't touch my amp." Chuck Berry played. He spoke in the third person. That was weird. That was a weird insight into Chuck Berry. He speaks in the third person. Chuck Berry has his amp set like that. All right.
That's hilarious.
Weird. Meanwhile. We're back in Atlantis,
yay.
And that grid is, and so, we had a question from the chat room about, let me just, where did it go? What was the main reason why Atlantis fell? And, we've gone through a couple of things. And then he also goes on to say, i.e. sex scandals or too much warfare. Yeah, well, warfare was a problem, definitely.
Yeah, well, I know that a lot of people think various things of that kind, like that it was because of warfare or because of genetic engineering gone wild, or, you know, various things. And I think my perception of it, a bit, and obviously this is just my filter, right? It might be wrong, but it's just my filter of just seeing it for myself, and also when I work with clients, a lot of people have memories of Atlantis that pop up and Egypt, because those were times in which there was a lot of trauma. And so when you do past life work, you know, if people died during the whole Atlantis thing, they can have some Atlantean trauma. If they were tortured in Egypt, like a lot of light people were, they may have some Egyptian trauma, right? So those kind of things do come up when you do regression work and stuff. And my perception is that actually the real reason for which Atlantis fell had very little to do with any of those things, that those things were symptoms of the energy going dark. And so those things did happen, but they were not the cause. The cause was that the energy itself was collapsing. The energy that sustained Atlantis was collapsing. And the Atlantean consciousness was infiltrated by dark consciousness that is actually the same consciousness that is creating problems now. And in fact, a lot of what we are going through now is almost like Atlantis 2, the revenge.
Yes, and this is why this conversation is relevant.
Yes,
because it underpins what's going on now.
It is. It's like we are going through almost 100% identical. I mean, the even the players are the same. The light people are the same. The dark people are the same. You know, it's the same souls, just incarnated in different bodies. And the quote-unquote dark priesthood of Atlantis, which at the time was not actually labeled that way, it was just a faction of the priesthood that became service to self and infiltrated by demonic energy and by Orion energies. That is the same faction of beings and energies that are still around now in the Masonic and you know, what would be called, what would be the dark priesthood of today, the whole occult and satanic and you name it, underpinning of our society, right? It's just that now it's being done in a covert way so that we don't see the dark priesthood, but we just see the results of what it is that they're doing. And a lot of the players that we actually see are not really the ones that are pulling all the strings, and I'm pretty convinced that we really don't know the people that are truly pulling the strings. But if we did and we looked at their souls, we would see that they're the exact same people that were pulling the strings during Atlantean times, right? And so basically what happened was that the priesthood of Atlantis was infiltrated by this dark force and corrupted, and then through that corruption it became harder and harder to sustain the consciousness grids and the grids that used to hold up the Atlantean reality. And then when those collapsed, basically there's two aspects to this. One is the grid that was upholding the consciousness, and the other one was the grid that was linking that consciousness to the planet. And so the collective consciousness of humanity started to descend, but so did the planetary grid that was attached to that, and then the planet became destabilized. Okay? There were various points on the planet that became unstable, literally unstable, and that is what I remember doing at the time, that in my role as whoever it is that I was, the Blue Syrian, very busy, grumpy Blue Syrian. that my job at the time was, I was very frantic. I was just going around to all of these places on the Earth and very frantically trying to fix these points so that they would become stable. And in fact, at some point, I plugged myself into them. Like, literally, I plugged my own energy field into them to try to stabilize them, right? And it didn't work, and it actually destabilized my energy field that I didn't manage to... It was like a desperate measure, right? And there was other people that were doing things of this kind, trying to keep this grid stable. So the... And also, if we put it into the whole context of the fact that this was a shift that was also going on beyond the planet at the solar level, it's kind of complicated to put into words, but basically, the sun, okay, galaxy pulses energy, it's high voltage energy. Sun receives the pulse. Sun starts to pulse also.
Yeah.
Sun activates Earth. Earth activates whoever's on the Earth, the humans, the animals, everything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now...
That's what we call the ribbon.
Yes. If you have... If the planet is stable and is going with the energy, then it can ride this. But it's a lot of energy coming in, okay? Mm. We can tell right now, we're going through something similar, how much energy that actually is. It creates DNA shifts, it creates consciousness shifts, it also creates physical shifts at the cellular level. The body struggles to integrate all of this, and so does the planet.
Mm.
That's why we're having earthquakes. That's why people say it's HARP. It's not. I mean, there is some HARP activity. I'm not discounting that there is some artificial earth activity, right? Mm. But there's also some very natural earth activity that's going on, that is the earth adjusting to this pulse that's coming in, right? Now, if the planet and the people on it have done their homework, they gradually upgrade their energy systems so that they can ride this wave of increased consciousness and increased energy. And therefore, the earth changes will be gradual. The physical changes within the physical body will be gradual. The DNA activations will be gradual. And the karma release will be gradual. And everybody can ride this thing, right? But if there are things that are getting in the way of that, and the planetary grid is unstable, and the people have not done their homework, or, which is more the case, a dark force has come in to disrupt that process on purpose because they don't want it to happen, okay, then you are going to have basically everything is going to become very intense, and it's going to become very hard and very difficult, and the people's bodies are going to get sick, the karma release can be so much that people can go crazy, and the earth changes become, the earth grids become unstable, and the earth changes become out of control, right? And in an extreme case, you can have that the earth changes are so big that they literally turn everything upside down, and you get a shift of the earth's crust that moves on top of the planet, because the crust is actually floating on top of the planet. I don't know if people are aware of that. It's not actually nailed down. It's not stapled onto the planet. It floats, right? And so you can literally have that the earth crust moves around, which sounds kind of harmless, but if it moves very fast, that's major earthquake central, tidal waves, blah, blah, right? So that is kind of what happened as far as I perceive in Atlantis, that what happened was that the earth grids became unstable, very much because that was the intent of the dark forces. They did not want the shift to occur, and I can go in a minute into why they didn't want that, but they just didn't want this to occur, and so they wanted to interfere with it, and interfering with it, the grids got destabilized, the earth could not ride the pulse that was coming in, and then you had the massive earth changes and so on. And a lot of people died. I mean, there wasn't as many people on the planet at the time as there are now, but a lot of people died. And there was just a few pockets that were left, and the pockets that were left were mostly of high initiates that were able to ride those changes because their bodies were very activated, and because they still had some of the skills, like being able to move through space-time without necessarily having to walk, right? There were skills of that kind around at the time, because the planetary energy could sustain it. It was a much more high consciousness level before the grids collapsed all the way. There was a lot of things that people could do that now people can't do because the energy can't sustain them.
Yeah, only the Sasquatch.
That's right, only the Sasquatch. So does that make sense? Did I manage to get that across, what happened then?
I hope so. We'll see if Andrew responds to that. But that's very interesting. And so... Well, it begs so many questions. Where you can start? But maybe you should carry on. If a question kind of bangs into my head, I'll pipe up. Okay. But keep going.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking where I was going with that. Okay. Well, let's do the parallel with then and now.
Yes.
Because that seems relevant, rather than keep on going on about Atlantis itself, because that was really the end of it. It's like Atlantis went down the tubes, and the big Earth changes, the whole thing went belly up, and most of the people died, the high initiate survived, and then they seeded the next level of civilization, both light and dark, right?
And of course, this is Noah's flood as well.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I think so, right? And if I remember correctly, almost every tradition on the Earth has some kind of story of some massive flood.
Yeah.
And if you think about this movement of the crust that I was talking about, mm-hmm. then you would understand why there would be a massive flood. And you know, who is it? Cliff High.
Yes. The global Cliff High's global coastal event prediction.
That's
yes.
right. He is tipped on that one at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So, how safe do you feel overlooking the Pacific Ocean, Katie?
Well, I'm just going to go there for a second. But I had some weird experiences earlier this year, and just before there was a day in, I think it was April, mm-hmm. in which there were earthquakes all over the Earth, and there was a big one, like an 8.5 in Sumatra.
Wow.
But there were about 10 to 15 earthquakes that were above a 7 the same day. And 2 days before that, I became obsessed with... I started looking at footage of the quake that we had here in 2010. We had a big quake of 7.4 here in San Diego in 2010.
Let's just get things in proportion because, you know, mm-hmm. earthquakes used to be quite rare, you know, when we were growing up. You know,
that's right.
Oh, there was an earthquake. Oh, that's an unusual event. What happened? And you know, it was like 5 on the Richter scale. Oh, let's get some money together and send them some cash. And now we're getting 7s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference between a 5 and a 6 and a 6 and a 7 is not like, you know, oh, that's a little bit more intense. That's like 10 times more intense. It's an exponential scale. So a 7 is very much more destructive than a 6, which is very much more destructive. And we never used to have, like, one 7 a year?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Or no, every few years.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you're talking about multiple 7s on one day.
On one day, and not only multiple 7s, there was an 8.5 and an 8 point something in the Sumatra area.
Oh, holy God.
And then there was another earthquake of a fairly significant magnitude near the South Pole, and then there was one in South America, and then there was one in, like, basically they were all along the major fault lines, you know, the major plate divisions around the world had some of these fairly significant earthquakes, and I think I counted about 15. And the thing is that none of this was actually reported in the news. I think they mentioned one of them, but they didn't say, oh, by the way, we've had 15 earthquakes above 7 today. They just mentioned one of them or two of them as a separate thing, but there was no connecting of the dots that the whole planet actually had a big major wobble and so on. And a couple of days before that, I started looking at the footage of this of the earthquake that we had in 2010, and then I got into watching all of the documentaries on the big tsunami that happened in Sumatra in 2006. I think it was 2006 or 2004, one of those 2 years.
Four.
And 2004. And And I was like, I don't understand why I'm so obsessed with this. And then I started having this massive fever, and I get these fevers, I get these pre-quake fevers, but at the time I hadn't quite put all of those dots together. And I had a fever of like 102, and I thought, well, I'm not well, I've got to go to bed. And then I had to go outside to get something, and I looked at, I live 3 blocks from the beach on top of a hill. Literally, I can walk to the beach in about 3 minutes, 4 minutes. Anyway, so I was looking at the horizon, and all of a sudden, I saw this wall of water coming towards me, and I was like, oh no, let's hope nothing awful happens.
That's one of these moments we've got an OSM here.
And then the fever kept on going up, and I got a little bit concerned because I was also having some physical symptoms. And then all of the quakes happened all over the world, and then my fever went away, and all the symptoms went away, and all of the bizarre visions of water went away, right? And since then, every time, you know, some of this kind of activity goes on, I seem to get these fevers. I don't know if it's my body that is trying to process something for the earth, or if it's just that I'm feeling the solar activity. I don't know what it is, but anyway, it seems to be my early warning system anyway, so if I get really high fevers, I will let you guys know.
But Katie, didn't you tell me at the beginning of this program, not 1 hour ago, I've got really high fever? Or is this a low fever?
Well, it's only 100, right?
Only 100. This girl runs hot.
I do. And seriously, I've been having fevers on and off since April. I've been running these fevers, and there's nothing wrong with me, so I don't really know what they are about. So there has to be some kind of planetary connection. But when they go really high, usually there's an earthquake somewhere the next day, right?
Well, I'll keep my eye on the RSOE site. HISZ.RSOE.HU. That's the alert map, and that's I'll post the link in the chat room in the Wall Spirit Radio.
Yeah. Just to make people a little bit more peaceful about all of this, but I think that the fact that we're actually having all of these quakes is a good thing. I think that the Earth is releasing a little bit of at a time instead of having to release everything all in one go.
Yes, that is a godsend, really.
Yeah, so obviously it's not very nice when people are in the middle of the earthquake, even if the earth is releasing slowly. If you're in the middle of the 8 earthquake, that's not good, right? But another thing that I have noticed is that very often, for example, on that day in which there were the 14, 15 different earthquakes, mm-hmm. almost every single one of them happened in a place where there was no people. So it was whether in the sea or, you know, it's almost as if the earth is conscious and is trying to do whatever it can to release this energy in places that are not going to kill a lot of people.
Yes.
Which is nice. Thank you. That's good.
Yeah, hang on. I'm just looking down here at San Diego. Mm-hmm. You're not far from a few epicenters yourself. Hang on, where are we? Wait till the map comes back in. But Santa Barbara, come on. See ya. San Diego. So what was that one? This one here was the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little big. 1.6 magnitude, down at the 9.80 kilometers.
Right, that's very, very small. That's a...
Yeah.
Just
a little rumble.
Signs.
A little rumble. Yeah, it's all 1.6. They're probably tumbling. That's a 3.3. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there you are. Do you have a feeling that this is like a trigger, that what you're seeing is what you saw then?
What do you mean? Explain that question a little better.
Well, okay, so you got this sense that... you've got an inner sense that is detecting earthquakes, or
mm-hmm.
Your body is responding, your cellular memory is responding in some way to this previous event. that is being reminded, because that this is the same kind of energy build up that you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, I think that. Okay, how do you explain these things without sounding completely crazy?
This is ever beyond. Just speak freely.
All right. The one of my jobs that I do still now is to work on the planetary energy. So in some ways, my energy and the energy of the planet are kind of interlocked.
Mm-hmm.
And this has some side effects. The side effects is that you get fevers and you get strange feelings and so on. And I think that everybody's energy is to some degree interlocked with that of the planet. But for some people, if it's your job, then the energy setup of your body is going to be such that you're very sensitive to the planet and you're very plugged into it, right? Mm. And I have had experiences in meditation in which my energy field and the energy field of the planet overlap. Like, I can get my energy field to go as big as the planetary energy and overlap with it. And it's not something that I particularly want to do, but there are times in which I need to do that, and I will do it, mm. right? And so I think that the reason for which I feel that is because just that the setup of my body, and it's been for several lifetimes. I think I've been a planetary energy worker for many lifetimes, not just in this lifetime. And so that is just the side effect of the way in which my energy field is set up. The challenging thing for me as a person is that I don't go around every day thinking, I am a planetary energy worker and my energy is part of the planet, right? I go about my business like any normal person, and then every now and then I get blindsided with something very weird, and I don't always connect the dots. So there are times in which I will connect the dots, and I will think, oh, obviously there's something going on with the planet, and then there are other times in which I don't, and I think I'm really sick and I'm going to die. But I'm not. It's eventually it gets released and it goes away. So now I kind of don't pay attention to it. It's like, oh, whatever, I have a fever, but just keep on going, right? So anyway.
So I'm
aware that I had a train of thought of somewhere where I was going with the whole cliff high thing. What was I going to say about that?
Well, we were talking about the global coastal event and how you tune in, and literally that, you know, you're experiencing the oneness with the planet, which is not always a blissful state.
No,
you know, because people always go, "Oh, I feel one with God." And they're just tripped out on a bliss vibe, because
yes.
If you felt at one with the planet, you'd feel the travail, you'd feel the death of the whales, the dolphins, the suffering of the children, you know, you'd feel all that. You know, it wouldn't be a pleasant experience, I wouldn't imagine.
And with me, I think I'm plugged into not that level of the planet. I think I'm just literally plugged into the whole the tectonic, you know,
yes,
the actual structure of the planet itself.
To me, it's like a skull. You know how a skull's got all these bones that are fused together?
Mm-hmm.
But allowing for growth.
That's right.
And I do firmly believe also that the planet is expanding.
It is. I'm totally on board with that.
So,
And it's expanding from the inside out.
Yeah.
Like, the expansion is coming from the core of the Earth itself.
Yes. I had a Scottish girlfriend who said that once I explained it, she said, "Ah, like a haggis does." You know.
Only in Scotland,
yeah. Actually, probably nobody knows what it's like when you boil a haggis, but when you boil the haggis, you know, the skin splits and, you know, this stuff from the inside is all swelling up and it splits the skin and it looks like the Earth. That's what the Earth does. You know, the mm-hmm. skin splits, that's the crust, and stuff comes up from underneath, hardens, and becomes the rift.
It does. And we have, again, I seem to be on a science trail today.
Yes.
The traditional explanation of how the Earth crust actually works is that it's like a cycling thing, so that the Earth crust is going down in places and then it gets magmified and then it comes back out on the other side. If you look at the diagrams of stuff like that, it's like a circle. So the Earth has these fault lines that are the boundaries some of them, are big ones, are the boundaries of the plates, right?
Yeah.
And the earth crust is divided into plates. So, and plates are floating on top of the magma. This is the traditional, the traditional geology model. And then what happens is that the plates are subsiding, they go down, and they kind of get liquefied, and then the magma comes out on the other side and creates new plates, right? And this whole thing keeps circling, and all of the plates are doing that, and earthquakes are caused by some of this movement.
That's so the traditional view.
That's the traditional view. But the and I think that that is actually probably true when the Earth is not going through an activation time. Like, I think that if you go back 200 years, that's probably true, that that is what's happening. But at the moment, what we are going through is different. What we, at the moment, it's not about that. The reason for which we're having, you know, 8,000 earthquakes per year at the moment is because the Earth is expanding from the inside.
Yeah.
And the reason, I think, for which we are having all of these earthquakes on the same day in different places is because literally there's a push coming from the sun that is activating the core of the Earth, and then that pushes out, and then the, all of the plates are moving at the same time, and therefore you're getting major earthquakes going on all at the same time. And in fact, there's a friend of mine that he is somebody that used to work in various projects, and so has some kind of insider info about certain things.
An industry insider.
Industry insider, and but he doesn't work in that industry anymore. But he still has a lot of connections, and he's a physicist like me, and he likes to, you know, he has his own research going on. And at a certain point, he showed me a, you know, seismograph, a global seismograph a readout that showed all of the seismographs of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, seismographs, whatever.
Seismograph, no, that's correct.
That's correct, okay, good, thanks. And there was all of the ones for the whole, all of the stations all around the Earth, and every single one of them at the same time had a 3.5 earthquake.
I remember that one. It was just a mass. All the whole screen was just like scribbles, because the everything was vibrating all over the planet.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
The 3.5. So the only way in which something can, like that can happen is if there, it means it's a planetary event for a start. And my belief is that we've had several of these. We just don't get to know about them. But they are planetary events, and these planetary events are triggered by the sun, and the sun is being triggered by the galaxy. It's a trickle-down effect, right? And by the galactic core, sorry, not the galaxy, the galactic core. And I've seen the galactic core psychically. I actually went out of body. Every now and then I get pulled out of my body, and they take me on trips around, you know, wherever I need to go. And in this particular time, I was actually taken out of my body, and I ended up in the center of the galaxy. And it was actually really interesting because I could see like the sliding down thing, kind of like a black hole type thing. But the energy was like really, really high. It was it's almost like different parts. The sun has a certain consciousness. The galactic core has a certain consciousness. We have a certain consciousness. And it felt like the galactic core actually had a really, really, really high consciousness. And this is the consciousness of it that is activating everything below it, right? And so I think that we are going through major shifts, and we're not really told about them. And every now and then there's some of these planetary events. And my understanding of this, both from a physics point of view and from a clairvoyant point of view, I often see things clairvoyantly, and then my brain makes sense of what I'm seeing, right? That is probably why my soul chose to make me do 12 years of sciences in school.
Yeah, and gave you the raise that you have.
Gave me a structure in my head so that I can interpret things, right? Yeah. And so the science of it, of what I see, it's almost like there's a transmission going on, but it's a transmission that goes from the core to the galaxy, to the core of the sun, to the core of the Earth. And then when it gets to the core of the Earth, obviously we're interested in that piece because we're on the Earth. When it gets to the core of the Earth, it pulses out. And when it pulses out, it pushes the energy of the planet out, and the planet then expands. Mm-hmm. And there are some moments in which that is happening in a big way, so that you have this kind of planetary earthquake. And even if it's not a huge earthquake, it's going on.
Yeah, everything grows. I mean, you look at mushroom.
It does.
So and why not?
We're growing from the inside out, and mm-hmm. even in terms of our own electromagnetic field and our own energy field. We also have a core, and that is also being activated. And guess what is the core of the what is the core of the human energy field? I'm asking you the question.
I would say it's the heart.
Yay!
It's the magnetic pump of the magnetic fluid that is flowing around our bodies, that is carrying. I think I'm so clever, right? Because I thought, you know, there's all these ancient questions, right? Where's the seat of the soul? You know, what part of the body is the soul? And, you know, to me, the soul is always fluid, and it's an electromagnetic phenomenon thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? The blood is the soul. The whole bloodstream is the soul.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
Well,
that's my answer, Katie.
No, but it is good. It's a good answer. And it is the heart, right? And particularly, there is a point right in the middle of the heart. And if you imagine your heart chakra, should we do this? Should we go to the core of the core of our being?
Let's go to the core.
I like the special effects.
Oh, you were getting it. All right, no, that means the rest of the people weren't getting it. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, now you can hear my echo.
Right. So we're still on air, right?
Yeah, we're still there. Sorry. Yeah, but go on.
Yeah. Okay. So, if you go into the heart chakra, most people know where the heart chakra is, right? It's in the middle of your sternum. Inside, on the central channel.
Yeah, kind of between your sternum and your spine?
Yes, right in the middle. It's like all of the chakra points are actually on the central channel, that is the line that goes from the middle of your head right through the middle of you on the inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the point that is corresponding to the middle of the sternum on that line, you can imagine, you know how people imagine the lotus flower? You can imagine that. And you can imagine the lotus flower opening, and inside of the lotus flower is, you can imagine a crystalline seed. It's like a small Herkimer diamond, and it's right in the middle. And when the heart chakra opens all the way, you can get in touch with this crystalline seed. And this crystalline seed is the jewel of the lotus, or, you know, the jewel of the heart.
The Padma of the Padme Hum.
That's right. And if you focus on that and you charge it with energy, and charging it with energy just means imagine that there's energy coming from source, from God, from wherever, right? Charging that point. At a certain point, that point will start to pulse. And when it starts to pulse, you can go with that pulse and really focus on it until you get into the rhythm of it, and then at a certain point it will burst and it will start to radiate, and it will radiate rays of light all around you, all around you, to the left, to the right, and even you know, vertically and below you, etc. It's like a radial 3D spherical burst. And that thing, if you can continue going with that, eventually starts to define the light body. You know how people talk about the macabre, they talk about all of these kind of things. And they make things very complicated, in my view. There's no need for that. And then we can get manipulated by dark forces that are trying to make us do everything back to front, you know what I mean? And we have arguments about that kind of stuff. It's best to avoid that altogether. Just focus on the heart chakra. Focus on the heart seed, the crystalline seed in the middle of the heart chakra. Charge it with light. Follow the pulse. Get into the rhythm of the pulse, the heart. And then at a certain point, the crystalline seed ignites. And when it ignites, then it radiates, and then if you stay with that, it will start to define your light body, okay? The light body is the soul body. It's the body of the soul. Most people do not have an activated light body, but it's not very difficult to activate it if you want to go there. The soul itself, you know how we are eternal, right? We go from one lifetime to another lifetime, to another lifetime, to another lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these incarnational bodies. However, the soul itself that is eternal, and you should be totally into this, because this is very, it's very seven rays, you know.
I'm with you so far.
You're with me so far, right? Yeah, the soul is actually on the soul plane. It's not really here.
It's in a hyperdimensional space, if you want to word it in a different way.
It is. And the but it projects a part of itself within the incarnation. And if we are to believe the kind of esoteric traditions, the soul is in meditation. It's almost like the soul is in meditation holding the incarnation in place. My experience is that there's a connecting energy line that connects the seed of the heart chakra with the seed of the crown. This is the one in the crown chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go and imagine a line of light that goes through your crown chakra, beyond that, ever beyond, and it goes all the way hyperdimensionally through to the soul plane, it will eventually click, and you will feel like a magnetic click, like a, you know, when you get two magnets that go and they click together. Okay, and if you intend it, you
that sounds like this.
It does. And eventually it will click to with the jewel of the soul that is the same kind of crystalline seed, but it's on the soul plane.
Mm.
And this is something that I have taught a lot of people to do because it can bring you in touch with your eternal self, but also the soul has higher consciousness in general because it's not ensnared by the density of the earth experience. So you can literally go to a higher level of consciousness just by connecting with your own soul,
mm-hmm.
Regardless if you're a young soul, old soul, whatever. Regardless of what level of soul evolution you're at, your soul is always going to have a more pristine vibration than the one that we're able to house into the body. And so you can connect the crystalline seed of the heart with the crystalline seed of the crown chakra, with the crystalline seed of the soul. And then once you've got that connect going, you can then download the soul vibration and pull it back so that the soul vibration starts to go from the soul to the crown to the heart. And if you do this very fast, it literally is a download. It's like you can get the energy from the soul to go down this line and smack into the crystalline seed, and then you get another kind of activation that makes the crystalline seed burst forward again, and then that fills your light body with the soul vibration. And so you can become ensouled. And the if you do this regularly, it can create very big shifts. And some of these things about, for example, remembering past lives or Some of these are literally the results of what happens when you start to activate your light body, when you start to bring the eternal self into the body. Okay, and it's really easy to do. It's not that difficult to do. And this is part of the quote-unquote tragedy of the Earth plane, is that there's so many esoteric technologies that are actually really easy, that could improve our lives and our consciousness and bring us to a very high level of consciousness very fast.
Mm.
But we are not taught any of this stuff. We're not shown any of this stuff. And it's all by design. And but the dark beings, you know, the friendly opposition, as they call them.
The powers that were.
Powers that were, yeah. they have maintained a lot of their technology. Do you remember Svali?
Ah, yes, Svali. Yeah, heavy duty.
Heavy duty.
She was a member of the Illuminati families, and she spoke of what happened in the night. But they would be very kind of normal looking people by day, but they would go to bed and they would all be dressed, you know, and suddenly their mind control triggers would switch on, and they would go into this altered personality, which was much more mean and nasty and dog eat dog, and they'd go along to the, they'd meet together and do all this absolutely horrific ritual stuff.
Yep.
At night, and then go home, wake up in the morning, and like it's just
go to work. Yes. So they had a ritual satanic personality, and they had a daytime personality.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think that that is the case with almost everybody in the public eye, like news reporters, politicians, corporate, top of the corporate food chain type people. I think they all have that kind of thing. So
Jimmy Savile.
It's very easy for them to go out and, you know, look like nice, pleasing people, because they are nice, pleasing people. They're literally just in their pleasing person persona.
Yeah.
And then, so there's no lie. It's very congruent. And then at night they become this other person. And then you have to ask yourself, who are they being controlled by?
Mm.
Because if they are responding to triggers, obviously they are not the top of the food chain. So who is the top of the food chain that is pulling all of those strings? Because you will find that kind of thing, I think, going on even in the very high upper echelons. You will still find people that are mind controlled in that way. So who's doing the mind controlling?
Exactly. It goes on and on and on. It goes back and back and back.
It does. And I think it's interdimensional entities. I think that when you go back and back and back, you find that actually there's very few humans on this planet that are free.
Hmm.
They just aren't. Even the ones that are in the friendly opposition, they're still controlled. And so they may get a slightly better rap in their control package, but they're still being controlled.
They're jealous of our freedom.
Absolutely. So... why did I bring up Svali? One second, because I'm trying to trace it here.
I'm sorry, because you dropped in Svali, and I thought, well, not a lot of people know about Svali.
No, she didn't do a hell of a lot of stuff because she was in danger for her life.
Yes.
Right? But one of the things that, aside from going and drinking blood and, like, you know, killing babies and stuff, she was a Illuminati trainer.
Hmm.
Right? And one of the things that she talks about is the, I'm trying to remember where that is. I think Project Camelot have her in the archives as a transcript. But it's not a Project Camelot interview. It's just her stuff. It used to be on this website called Suite 101. And she just put it out there under a fake name.
All right.
And then that website was shut down, and somebody kept the transcript.
Yeah.
And it's on the Project Camelot website somewhere.
Yeah, I think you can also get it on the Bibliotheca Pleiades.
That's very likely.
But if you can remember how that's spelled, you know, you're better man than I. There we go.
Yeah, that website is great. They have everything.
They have everything. If only you can spell it.
conspiracy encyclopedia of the universe.
That's right. I mean, it's got they got all the Zeta Talks, they got all the Alex Scholia early stuff.
Yeah, and they also have all of the Fritz Springmeier books, every single one of them, all transcribed, appendixes included.
Excellent. All available, absolutely free of charge.
Absolutely.
So that's... hang on, how do we get a biblio? Teca, C-E-C-A, P-L-E-Y-A-D-E-S .com, I think, or .net, maybe .net.
So the Smiley thing, the reason for which I brought her out at this is because one of the things she talks about is the training that they received, and in the training that they received and that she was also giving to people, she was actually somebody that did the mind control thing. And, you know, she tortured children, basically, other Illuminati children, to make them into better Illuminati machines. And they were, her job was to, one of the jobs that they had was to decide if somebody was, for example, better as a journalist. At 2 or 3 years old, they would kind of look at them and think, okay, this person has acting ability, let's put them over here. This person... they have the sun in Capricorn, they'll be a good general, let's put them over there. Do you know what I mean? Like, so they would sort them out by what they felt was their most valuable skill.
Yeah.
And then they would mind control them, torture them, and train them so that they would flesh out that skill, and so that they had alter personalities that would take that skill to the max, right? So.
Yeah.
That is, I think, how a lot of Hollywood stars are born, and a lot of singers, musicians, and politicians, and so on. They're literally trained from when they're really, really tiny to do that kind of thing. But one of the things that they also did was teach people all about the history of the Earth, the way that it really is, and they would give them esoteric skills, and they would also teach them about the grand old times of Atlantis, right, and so on. So inside of the Illuminati circle, all of the history is maintained, and it's passed down by, you know, oral tradition, and so are all of the esoteric traditions. Well, instead, we haven't retained any of them, and in fact, they've gone to great lengths to neutralize our understanding of a lot of esoteric things. And one very typical case is astrology. Okay, astrology has been reduced to this kind of newspaper column stuff that doesn't work or works very, very little, and is being ridiculed a lot and so on. And yet, in the elites use it 100% of the time, and they use it because it works. And so, that is just an example of how we are being disempowered while they keep all of the goodies, right? But we are shifting and moving forward as a planet, and so a lot of those things are coming forward. And one of the ways in which the hidden knowledge is coming forward is through our own inner memory banks. And the inner memory banks are the memory banks of our own soul, of our own DNA, of our own past life history. So the more you can activate the eternal self within the body, the more you can then start to unlock the DNA, because everything is stored. The DNA is like a computer. It's like the hardware, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of the programs are stored in it, and a lot of them are dormant, and they need to be switched back on. And they get switched back on by consciousness. They get switched back on by intention. They get switched back on by the bringing the soul light into the body. We'll switch on some portions of the DNA that are sleeping. And also the solar system itself at the moment is switching people's DNA on automatically. That is why everybody's going through such a hard time, because it's one thing to say, hey, I want to switch back on a portion of my sleeping DNA and clear out some karma, and I'm going to sign into this workshop, and I'm going to take the week off then to do it, right? Well, he said, right now it's like, okay, well, if you like it or not, you are on the earth plane, and you are in the workshop, and it's going on every single day, every single minute. and every day it's double what it was the day before.
Absolutely.
And so you will clear your stuff if you like it or not.
Absolutely. And so, to give people an opportunity to clear their stuff, so to speak, should we take another little break?
Sure.
Because we've been at it for an hour there. Didn't even, did you notice that 90 minutes has gone by so far?
It's good.
Quite.
I was concerned I didn't have enough to talk about.
No, I'm sure we'll always find something to talk about. So this is another appropriate titled track. This is called Travels. This is again Pat Metheny, and this is Travels.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Ever Beyond. How long has the music been stopped, Katie?
Just a couple of seconds, you're okay. Oh, sorry.
You see, when the music stops, the mic goes live.
Right.
So you could probably hear me coming back up the stairs with my cup of tea.
I did.
I think everybody did. So that was great.
Live radio.
That's, I love it.
No, I think it's good. I like it.
So yes, travels, Pat Metheny, and so back to our journey tonight, and it's been a journey through time. And through mind space and soul space. Mm-hmm. This journey is going to continue with your radio show coming up soon.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
And I haven't yet thought a hell of a lot about what I'm going to do with it. So I know that it's not the right thing to say, but it's the truth.
Well, I'm sure some part of you has got it ticking away in the background, you know. Getting it all sorted.
It is. And some of it is me. At the moment, I'm doing my PhD in transpersonal psychology, right? Uh-huh. And I have assignments and stuff, and I'm always the person that hands in the assignment at the very, very last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is, but it seems to be that I use all the time that I have.
Yes, yeah.
to do what I need to do.
You operate in divine timing.
I'm a procrastinator.
The wizard is never early. The wizard is never late. The wizard is always on time.
Right. So, but yeah, in terms of the show, Dave actually mentioned to me doing a show way back when I met him. I met you guys, when was it, about a year and a half ago now, right?
I think you might have met Dave a bit before at Awake and Aware.
I met him before that also. And at Awake and Aware he was like, oh, I want you to do a show, blah, blah. And at the time it sounded like a nice idea, but I didn't really know what to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got sick. You remember that I got quite sick at the end of last year.
Yes, you've been going through it.
All of my hormones collapsed. So I had, not the hormones, but the actual glands that do the hormones. Mm. So my adrenal glands, my thyroid, they all collapsed. And I think the whole endocrine system can get a little bit of a beating with the... the bodies are not designed to hold that much energy necessarily, and every now and then they get a bit of a beating.
Mm.
So I've had adrenal issues for about 10 years, and every now and then I get a little bump that takes me down. And around the end of the year, last year, I got really, really ill, and I couldn't breathe, couldn't walk, and my heart was giving me trouble. And I thought I was dying, right?
Mm.
And so I was like, that's no good. I better rest a little bit.
Take it easy a day or two, yeah?
That's right. So a day or two turned into about 6 to 8 months, right? And during that time, I put a lot of attention on my diet. I pulled back on everything that was not necessary and posted pictures of cats on Facebook. Instead of having debates, so just mm-hmm. okay, let's do jokes and cats and that's it, right?
Mm.
I pulled my energy back a little bit. But I'm recharged now. The body is better, and also sometimes you need to pull back so that you can. It's like a refresh, reboot thing.
Yeah, we can't breathe out all the time.
Exactly, and so it's actually I've enjoyed it. I enjoyed being a little bit more personal. I'm not a particularly public person anyway. I don't particularly, there's some people that want to be public all the time.
Yeah.
And they want to, I'm not really wired that way. I really like my solitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. But so I've done quite a lot of writing during that time as well. So I'm hoping in a couple of months to have finished writing the book that I'm writing that is about Atlantis and Egypt and the dark forces and all sorts of things to do with the planet and so on, and the dark energy and exorcism and etc. So that's what the book is going to be about.
Yeah.
Teaching people how to be their own exorcists as well, right? So that they can get rid of some of the pesky energies that are around them.
Galanti City.
Yeah, exactly. That's my bag, right?
And that's brilliant. So that's going to come up in the show, yeah?
Yeah, so that's going to come up in the show. But also, what I was thinking, is it this? I don't know what I'm allowed or not allowed to do, but I was kind of thinking that I would like to do, instead of doing a show all the time, do one a month that is basically metaphysics, where it's me just talking about various metaphysical things and even taking people through processes and updating them about the planetary energy and all of that.
Yep.
And then another show that is instead about interviews. I have not a huge amount of time, right? I'm committed in so many different ways to so many different things. So what I wanted to do was do quality rather than quantity, right? And to focus on, like, to make one more like a, almost like a session that people can participate in, so that they can get healing and upgrades and so on, right? And then another one that is more of okay, let's talk to somebody interesting, right?
Sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, and I would do one that is just music if you guys have the music license, but you don't, right?
We don't have a music license, which means we're sort of piratey. I've asked you, Brian, yeah, you know. We rejected the license. We were just about to sign, and no, don't do that, because you're signing your various rights away, and you have to cough up money and things. So we play stuff. We have not been hit by copyright yet.
Right.
But so that's where it's at. So so you have an amazing taste in music, as I've seen over the last couple of years that I've known you. Mm-hmm. You post these tunes on Facebook that I've never heard. And so that's always refreshing, you know, and some of them are really new sounds, you know. I like new sounds.
Yes, I like sound. I have a past life memory, which I was a sound healer in Tibet, and I was a monk, and at the time my thing was, big gongs and things that made a lot of noise, and I would irritate all of the other monks, and I didn't...
Oh, I relate to that too.
I was like literally irritating. I would go around and go, gong,
bingity bong.
Just stop this. We're trying to meditate. Just go away. And I sometimes feel that it's still the same with my Facebook thing. I know that there's a lot of my Facebook people that they like my little metaphysical tidbits every now and then, and they like my, you know, my reflections, and they're like, oh no, she posted another 5 tunes.
Oh no, I think it's brilliant. It's like, because it's, you know, it's information, it's vibration, it's feeling.
It is.
And it's part of the package. So I don't see any problem with you having a show, you know. Maybe even a section of every show you could have, right, okay, so let's chill out. And you know, make a meal of playing some really cool tunes that chilled you out as well.
No, that would be really fun. I love music. I've been around music since I was a tiny little girl. I was raised... My mum was a single mum. So I was raised with my grandparents, and pretty much my grandparents were the adults, do you know what I mean, in the house, right? Because my mum was very, very young when she had me. And she was a teenager. And my granny... She was a singer. She was a professional singer in the 30s and the 40s. She actually had albums, you know, the ones that you put on the gramophone. And then at the time, it wasn't that easy to get a record done. And she used to tour. She was on tour on the radio, singing and all that. And so I was exposed to music very early. Through her, and she taught me to sing three-part harmony, by the time I was 3 years old, I had to join in the three-part harmony thing. And which I liked. It was fun.
Hello, hello, hello.
And then my mom married a musician.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was 5, and so there was more music, and they were both, but when those two got together, it was, I think, 1972.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like really in the middle of the 70s. So
the heyday.
Like beginning of, that's right. And so in our house, we always had music playing, and it was excellent music.
Mm. And
I got,
and it was so creative then.
Yeah, very creative. And we had singing on Sundays just in our house. It was just part of the tradition of the sing on a Sunday. And and it was fun. So the music kind of stuck with me. My brother has become, he's a musician also. I mean, not also, I'm not a musician, but he is. And so he continued with that tradition. And what he does now is soundtracks for his girlfriend's movies, because she makes movies and he makes the music for the movies.
How perfect.
Right? So lots of music. So music is part of... it's important to me. It's a hobby, but it's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, and it makes me happy.
Excellent. So we will look forward to Katie Galanti on Wolf Spirit Radio. It will be just after this slot, actually. It'll be this time of night. This time of night for me. This time of the afternoon. It's like 10 to 5 in the afternoon for you. Just coming up, you're going to have the dinner time slot.
Yeah, excellent.
So, maybe some nice music at 6, you know.
Yeah.
You could do a news slot from your realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Cosmic yeah. news. You know, like Tracy is does her Turtle Island news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's plenty of material. There's always stuff to talk about, really. I mean,
yeah. There's also, even beyond the news, one of the things that I think people need is like the energy is intense that we're going through at the moment. So and sometimes people understand it intellectually, but they still don't know how to shift it. You know what I mean? They don't know how to move it. They don't know how to navigate it, and so on. And so. Even on my YouTube thing, I have a YouTube thing. I do a video every 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my focus is to help people to go through processes that can help their energy field and their body to handle these energies. And the energy is constantly changing, and it's intensifying, actually, as we go forward. And so a process that you do... one day, if you do it 3 weeks later, it's different. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And so I would like to provide people with with an energy experience that can help them to navigate stuff.
Navigating the high seas of the astral waters. Us now pirate ship, Wolf Spirit. Sailing the high seas. Captain Cutlass Corso.
I'm seeing a pirate first life with you.
We're going to have to get Tracy to listen to this, because she's always saying, talk like a pirate, Jeremy, talk like a pilot.
That's excellent.
That's so funny. Anyway, so...
So how's your tea, JP? Is it still warm?
Oh, it's good. I built one up, and I've still got it on the little candle stove. Mm-hmm. It's all right. I'm supplied. I'm kind. I'm fine. You know. Everything's fine if the cup of tea's hot.
That's good.
Oh, this is so much fun. So you'll be coming on about this time, and I'll be pulling you in. That's what I was thinking. Katie,
what?
you pay the rent by doing private readings, don't you? What do you do for in a private session for different people? You've got probably lots of different things.
I do. It's always a bit of a challenge to explain because in some ways I do whatever the person needs, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of broad. So I sometimes wear a counsellor's hat. I sometimes wear a more psychic counsellor type hat, right? And then I have I do the entity releasing and depossession for some people that need that, and that goes from minor disturbances to somebody rolling on the floor with a reptilian speaking through them. Do you know what I mean? Like I've had the full gamut. So I've had a session that lasted 13 hours with the reptilian speaking in tongues, right? So I don't do those kind of sessions every day.
Thankfully. <yeah.
laughs> Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's nice to learn things, but yeah. It's a little exhausting. And so there's that, and then a general energy field repair. I upgrade people, check their DNA. At the moment, I do a lot of solar upgrades that are basically, I look at people's, this is how it goes. I look at somebody's energy field, and then I bring in the energy of the sun, and I literally put them side by side. And then in my screen, I see things in a screen inside my head. In my screen, the energy field of the person lights up, and it shows me what needs to be repaired or shifted or widened or whatever so that it can handle the solar energy, okay?
Right.
So that's one thing that I do, and some people understand the value of that, so they want that done.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're talking about is that you go at quite a sort of high level, that, you know, it won't get past you. Whatever you've got in you won't get past you. You know, it's you know, you can handle quite a high voltages and things like that.
Yeah. I can. And in fact, and this is not an ego statement, it's just the truth, right? That I feel that now the people that come to me generally, they already are at a certain kind of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And really, in some ways, because otherwise they don't even understand what it is that I'm trying to do. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, why would I want that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody to even just, for it to resonate with them, they already are at a certain point where they have a certain kind of awareness, mm-hmm. right? Otherwise, it's like, doesn't make a lot of sense why it's useful.
Yeah.
And just to explain a tiny bit why this kind of thing is useful, your energy field can fry, your circuits can fry, your chakras can fry. If the energy is too, it's literally like a light bulb. If you have a light bulb that is 40 watts capacity and you're trying to run 100 watts through it, it will burn, right? The filaments will blow. And it's the same for the circuitry within our own body. If you're trying to put in a voltage that is coming from the sun that is really, really high, and for some reason your energy field is not quite prepped all the way, it can fry, and that does not mean that you spontaneously combust, although that's possible, right? But mostly what it means is that you can have headaches. A lot of people have hormonal issues, right? When I was saying before that my hormones went all squippy, it's like...
Yeah. It's not like chemical, it's an electrical situation.
It's electrical, yeah. So the chakras are connected to the endocrine system. And so if the chakras are not handling the energy properly, the endocrine system can start going out of balance. And then when the endocrine system starts going out of balance, then you get chronic fatigues and fibromyalgias and so on. Some of these conditions are caused by the toxicity in our environment, but some of the conditions are also caused by energetic overload that is not being processed properly. All right. So I also do past life regressions. I do past life psychic research, and I also connect people to their soul, to their guide. I do guided imagery stuff where I bring people in connection with their guides and counsels and so on, multidimensional aspects. And I also do childhood trauma work, right? So connect people with their inner child and deal with blockages that have to do with inner child type stuff, right? So that kind of covers it, I think.
So, if you need any of that kind of thing, And actually, you know, I wouldn't put it past a lot of the listeners of this station. You know, there's a lot of people who have, for instance, been in cults and with gurus and things like that, or been involved with black sex magic, which raises your kundalini far before your chakras are available. Yes. And you can repair that kind of thing?
Yes, and also, and here I'm going to go with caution, because some of these things I actually understand how to undo, but I haven't had that many people come to me with the issues, but I'm open, right, mm-hmm. is that sometimes people that have been through that kind of cult, black magic, satanic, whatever, and are stepping out of it because it was never their choice in the first place, right, they will have entities that are actually plugged into them as a result of those activities that they may... that may be plugged into them regardless of the fact that they have chosen to go in a different direction. And I find this a lot. I do a lot of this kind of work with past lives. There can be somebody that in a past life was really dark and they made a whole bunch of pacts with the dark side and dark entities. And in this life, they're light and they, you know, but they have psychic attack all over the place, or they are still experiencing disturbances of some kind, and they think it's coming from the outside, but it's not. It's coming from the inside, because those agreements are still in place. And so sometimes you need to go in and undo the agreements, right? And release the beings so that the person can come back into balance. And so if people have had experiences of that kind, there can be stuff that needs to be let go of that they may not even be aware of.
Brilliant. Just at the hour. Thank you very much, Katie Galanti.
You're very welcome.
This has been Ever Beyond. In a few weeks' time, an indeterminate number of days, we will soon be followed by Katie at this time. So, until that time, thank you very much, Katie Galanti. Everybody, there will be a page on Wolf Spirit Radio soon. Maybe there already is one that will link you in with Katie's websites and connections and links. Thank you very much, and check out on Tuesday. If I haven't been busted and put in jail, on Tuesday I'll be no joke. Tuesday I'll be speaking with Robert Rajnak from Hungary, the son of the Hungarian chief of intelligence. That should be interesting. Good night.